All right, if you would be turning your Bibles to Luke 21. Luke 21, we are going to be talking about the poor widow and her gift that she offers of two mites. A little extra feedback here. We appreciate Kim's prayer. It is so wet, my hogs are not looking for a hole to wallow in, but a dry place to get in. It has been so wet, and that's the way it is in Kentucky and this area. It seems like we have patterns of weather, and now, as some people say, probably in the summer we'll probably be praying the opposite prayer, wanting rain. We have had very wet conditions. We are involved in our His Word study, and we're going to be doing Luke 22 through John 2 this next week, and so I encourage you to try to stay. I know that you'll be blessed in reading the New Testament and also following along with these studies and the devotional thoughts that the authors are giving. In Luke 21, we have this story of the widow's mites. But I want to back up and I want to begin reading in chapter 20, beginning at verse 45. And in the hearing of all the people, he said to the disciples, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes, love greetings in the marketplace and the best seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at feast." So he's warning them to beware of these scribes, the religious teachers of the Jewish people. Probably that would be this connotation as well, the Pharisees and Sadducees and these teachers of the law. And then verse 47, "who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers." For a show they make long prayers and they devour a widow's house. "They will receive a greater condemnation." Now, if you don't have a chapter break, remember the original Bible did not, notice then you go from talking about devouring widows' houses to an illustration of a widow. And I think there's several comparisons that we want to make here. In fact, I want to note five different comparisons in this passage that I think will be helpful to observe and to look at for our own lives. The first comparison I want to make is hypocrisy versus sincerity. Hypocrisy versus sincerity. In verses 45 through 47, the scribes are put up as being hypocrites. And of course, you're well aware that this is a common rebuke of the Pharisees and scribes and Sadducees that Jesus dealt with. In fact, Matthew chapter 23 is a long discourse that Jesus gives numerous woes to the Pharisees. He says they are like whitewashed tombs that on the outside are clean and white, but on the inside they're full of dead men's bones. And so he talks about their hypocrisy. And here in this instance, he talks about how they like to wear their long robes. They love to have their religious meetings in the marketplace so everybody sees them. They want to fight for the best seats in the synagogues. You know those were the back row seats, right? Anyways, we'll move on. They fought for the best seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at feast. They wanted to sit at the head table up there and let everybody see them at the feast. They wanted to have the look of religion. They wanted to be the ones who people thought they were religious. And they make long prayers. And that reminds us, just a couple of chapters earlier in Luke 18, where you have verses 9 and following, the story of the Pharisee and tax collector, and how the Pharisee makes this long prayer. He thanks God that he's not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, even like this tax collector. And he talks about what he does. He fasts twice a week. He gives of his tithes and various things like that. Now, they're hypocrites. Now compare that with this woman in verse chapter 21. This woman who is described as a poor widow, doesn't set or fight for the best seats. She is the most humble of social characters you can pick out. In other words, she's a woman in that culture. She's a widow. She's lost her provider. She's, we might assume, an older lady, probably, as we often think about that idea, that she, because Paul's going to really emphasize this concept, and the Old Testament emphasizes this concept, that older widows should be provided for and cared for and seen about. So it's this image of a widow in the New, Old and New Testament, and in that culture, is the most one of the most humble characters you could pick out. And so it's a great contrast between these men who have long robes, they stand out and pray like this, and they fast, and they do all these things to what? To be seen of men. And then we have this humble widow who goes in and just offers her two mites. There's a great contrast here between this idea of hypocrisy versus sincerity. When we think about this concept of sincerity, we ought to understand that sincerity involves, in its literal definition in the Greek, clearness or purity. The Latin term sincera comes from the idea of when they would have vases or other types of pottery. And they would sometimes, because, you know, they would make that pottery out of clay, they'd put it in the kiln and bake it and things. And sometimes, if they didn't do it right, it would crack. Well, they would put wax along those cracks and fill that in and then just kind of cover over it. And you couldn't tell just by looking at it that it had wax in it. And the word sincerity comes from that Latin expression, sin, the Latin with or without, Sarah, wax, without wax. And the idea is, you can put our vase, and so if you had a real vase, you would advertise it as sincera, without wax. It is what it claims to be. Put it out in the sun. Go over it and look at it. It will not have any wax in it. We haven't tried to cover up all the mistakes so you can't see. It is what it is. It is sincere. And that's what we as Christians should be. We should be sincere. What you see is what you should get. The Bible talks about this idea way back in Joshua 24, where it speaks of our faith when it says, "Now therefore fear the Lord and serve Him in sincerity." Serve Him in sincerity. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 8, the same term is used as here when it speaks of the Lord's Supper. "And let us take the feast with sincerity." With sincerity and truth. And then it's also used of our faith in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse number 12. We need to think about our faith. You know, there are far too many Christians who give off the impression to the world that they're just a hypocrite. Because they go to church, that they live like and act like the world the rest of the week. And that causes the people of the world to say there's really nothing to their faith, that they're being hypocritical in their actions. I don't really see how their faith impacts them. They're not sincere, they're not pure, they're not clear. And so Jesus deals with this issue in the religious people of His day. The next contrast we see in our text is this contrast between greed versus care. And so in Luke 20 verse 47, they devour widows' houses. I mean, how much more of a Scrooge can you get? Here's widows that have lost their husband, and these scribes and Pharisees, and I don't know the details behind this, maybe they were the landlords, maybe it was some type of way with the temple system or the religious system where they had, you know, they had provided these homes or something. And anyways, Jesus is referring to some kind of practice where they, out of greed, are taking the properties, the homes of these widows. And that these religious men should be, the scribes and Pharisees, they should be the kind of men who are paying and providing for the homes of these widows. But instead, they're devouring their homes. They're taking their homes. That's similar to some of the accusations made by some of the prophets like Amos and Isaiah to the people of their day, and to how they were so greedy they would even take advantage of widows. I tell you, we live in a culture today where some of the financial practices of some of our businesses, where I believe they prey upon the sometimes the mentally challenged, but also they sometimes prey upon the elderly, the weak. You know, as a Christian, we should never want to get our gain, any kind of gain, by having to step on and hurt someone else. But certainly not someone who is in an unfortunate situation like a widow. You know, the New Testament, as well as the Old Testament, puts forward this idea that a godly person should care for widows. We see all throughout the Old Testament, in the law of Moses, it was required that the children of Israel, they were to care for the widows amongst them. There were various laws and things about how to care for the widows. In fact, we see in the book of Ruth that they were practicing this by leaving the corners of their field for the poor and the widows. We see the law of the Levirate, which is the idea that when you had a widow in your family, that the younger brother was to take in that widow, and actually, if she was still of childbearing age, bring up a descendant so that that widow could be provided for. There was numerous ways for widows to be taken care of in the old law. Chief amongst was the children of Israel were to provide for them. In other words, if there were widows in your community, there was no welfare like a government. The law of Moses was the government. And the law of Moses said that they were to provide for the widows, for the strangers. And of course, connected with this, and we're not talking about this tonight, but connected with widows, is the orphans. The two groups of people that are most vulnerable in culture and society, widows and orphans. God says God's people should care about them. In Job chapter 31, Job will list off this concept when he's declaring his innocence. And one of the things he lists, he said, that I took care of, is the concept, paraphrasing, I provided for widows. I didn't neglect widows in his wealth. And Job, of course, was extremely wealthy. And then in the New Testament, we see Jesus. Some of his miracles are with widows. He sees the widow of Nain, who is weeping because her son has died, her only son who could provide for her. And Jesus will resurrect or resuscitate her son and bring him back to life so that this widow can be provided for. And then in 1 Timothy, Paul is going to say some things about widows in chapter 5, verse 3. He says, any widow in that context who, and he gives some requirements about these different widows, and when they should be provided for the church, if they're over 60 years of age, and if they don't have anybody in their home, their home should provide for them first. But if their home can't do it, their family, then the church should provide for these widows. He calls them widows indeed. And then in chapter 5, verse 3, he says, honor widows. Honor widows who are truly widows. And then James chapter 1, verse 27, pure and undefiled religion before God the Father is this, to visit widows. The concept of the word visit there is not just go see them, but it is take care of them, provide for them, see to their needs. Remember Acts chapter 6, the problem in the early church arose because the Greek widows were being neglected in the distribution of the food. The early church, one of the first organized ministries that caused them to probably have to get deacons or servants of the church, was to provide for widows.
And we need to think about it in our own lives. Am I more focused on getting money? Am I more focused on my own pursuits? Or do I have a care, not just for widows, but for those who can't help themselves sometimes? For the orphans, for the humble amongst us in our culture, in our society. And so there's greed versus care. And then, number three, we notice in this context as well, back in Luke 21, there is the idea of rich versus poor. And so Luke 21, we have in this idea that there are rich, and then there are this widow who is very poor. In Mark chapter 12, verse 41, Mark's account of this incident, he refers to the rich. Jesus was sitting there in the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums. Many rich people put in large sums. And so you have this poor widow then who comes and puts in two small copper coins, which make a penny. Now when we think about rich versus poor, that's often a comparison in this world. But interesting, in Luke, it's a common comparison and one that you see sometimes. For example, back in Luke chapter 12, he talked about the rich fool who focused on his own attainment and was not rich toward God. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, we have this concept as well in verses 9 and 10 when Paul would write about the rich. And he says, "But those who desire to be rich," notice the emphasis on desire to be rich, which connects back in with Luke 12 and the rich fool, that desire for that physical attainment, it was all that his life was about, "fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, and it is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced them through with many pangs." Then down in verse 17 through 19, he talks about this same idea. He says, "As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who will richly provide us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share." When you think about this context here of Luke 20 and 21, and you think about our culture, who got noticed? Well, the rich who were bringing in all those large amounts of money. And they were significant. And let's just say the temple probably couldn't do the work of the temple if those rich people hadn't given some of that money. But who does Jesus notice? He notices this poor widow. And there's a lesson here, I think, for us. That God has a real heart. Has a real heart for the poor. He wants us to care for the poor. And He cares and notices for the poor. And especially, not just for those who are physically poor, but those who are physically poor and have a heart for God. There's a lot of people that are poor, but they're still wicked. This woman was poor, but she had a lot of faith. She had a lot of faith. And so when we think about this comparison, we need to understand the dangers that go with being rich. And we need to understand how God cares and loves and notices the gifts of the poor. And that leads us to this thought here on our fourth comparison in this text. How did man see it versus how God saw it? Monetarily, this was a very low gift. Different commentators, you know, put it at different amounts. The ESV version here in Mark says it was about a penny, kind of how it translates it. Some, when they try to put it in value of today's money, I've even seen that it could be fractions of a penny.
In other words, this was an extremely low amount. In its day, it was a very low amount. And so, monetarily, from man's perspective, this was not very much money. The rich focused on others seeing them. In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus will talk in the Sermon on the Mount about how they would blow trumpets. And they would let everybody see that they were coming. And then here he would come in. You know, you can just picture the scene. Coming in to give off their big gift. And they would drop that in the collection. And everybody would know, this rich person is giving this amount. And that's kind of the idea you see going on here. And if you think about this busy, hustling, and bustling synagogue time and all these people giving these gifts, however they're giving the gifts, kind of like I picture it like a marketplace, mall scene, or it doesn't seem to be a formal worship service with people dropping in these gifts. I can see all the nice people, you know, the people in the long robes, the scribes that Jesus is talking about who've been praying these big prayers. You would notice them. I mean, if you and I were there, we would see them. Probably we would not notice this poor widow. You know, maybe our image is wrong. We don't know for sure. But I personally see this widow as being the kind of person who just blended into the crowd. I don't think anybody walks up and does a little dance and says, look at me, I'm dropping in 2 mites. Not even a penny. Because even a poor person thinks that's not very much, did he? I'm sure she just walked up very humbly, dropped it in. If you and I were there, we probably would not have even noticed. We would have noticed all those other wealthy people giving the large gifts. We probably would have not noticed hers. The rich focused on others seeing them. But God, as Matthew chapter 6, the Sermon on the Mount talks about do your works in private. Don't let the right hand know what the left hand is doing. The idea there is not just about personal privacy in the church and that other people can't know. I don't think that's the idea. The idea is about us having a heart that we do it not to be seen of men. Both of these concepts, fasting and giving, that Jesus is talking about in Matthew chapter 6, it's not wrong for people to know that you do them. And prayer is the third concept he's talking about. We lead public prayer, and people are going to know you lead a public prayer. Or we may fast. We even have days of fasting as a congregation. And you might be fasting individually sometime, and you may have a necessity to tell someone. And it's not wrong for you to tell someone. But what's wrong, and this is why we often keep these things private, and it's not wrong for you to tell someone when you give. But there's that temptation that Satan wants to tell us in our heart. You need to be bragged on. If you tell everybody, if you make a big deal out of this, everybody will pat you on the back, and it gets to our motives. And so to protect ourselves against temptation, we keep many things private. That's what Jesus is talking about. God saw her gift as priceless. He valued the heart. If you read the text there, Matthew 21, Jesus says, this poor widow put in more than all of them. Notice Jesus doesn't think financially. Obviously, you couldn't buy as much electric bills or as much new window decorations for the synagogue. You couldn't buy new pews with her money. But Jesus said, she put in more than all of them. For they all contribute out of their abundance, she out of her poverty. He valued her heart, and he looked at the heart. In 1 Samuel 16:7, when God is talking about his future king, David. And of course, Saul was that tall, good-looking man. And the children of Israel wanted Saul because he was a head taller than everybody else. And I like to point that part out. But anyways, he was this tall, nice-looking guy that Saul. But Saul got into all kinds of trouble. And David was this shepherd boy that was out in the field, the youngest of the clan. And you have 1 Samuel 16:7. For God does not look like man looks. Man looks at the outward appearance. But God, He looks at the heart. God looks at the heart. And so we have to understand God's view. He values the heart. Now if you turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, we think about our giving. You know, it's not changed much. It really hasn't.
In 1 Corinthians 9, 16 and 17, we read the same idea. It should be 2 Corinthians 9, 16 and 17. Still the wrong reference, but I'm in the right chapter now.
I want to go to verse 6 and 7. The point is this: whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided, some versions say purpose, in his heart. Not begrudgingly or reluctantly or under compulsion, not made to do it, for God loves a cheerful giver. God looks at our heart.
The Greek word there is hilarion, which is this idea of where we get our English term hilarious. That's the word used for cheerful. It's this idea of that we have, you know, come to mean for us just hilarious laughter. And that's kind of an odd thought for us, isn't it? I really didn't hear a lot of breaking out laughter when we passed the contribution plates this morning. But the thought is, in our heart should be this overwhelming joy, this excitement, this... We've kind of lost, maybe we've added a little bit to this meaning, but this hilarious side of giving, that we're cheerful in it. We're happy to do it. And so God looks at our hearts. And finally, in this passage, we see a comparison back in Luke 21. We see a comparison between abundance and poverty. In Luke 21, we see that the main emphasis here is that they all contributed in verse 4 out of their abundance. But she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had to live on. Now, this is an amazing statement. Her gift was all she had to live on. All she had to live on. I don't know if she was desperate. And I don't know, you know, this would be a good question to ask Jesus when we get to heaven. What happened to this lady after she left the synagogue that day? Did the synagogue and the Jewish people take care of her? Did Jesus do something? I don't know. To me, this is just Josh, but it's almost like, to me, it's kind of like in the story of Elijah and the widow, and, you know, the widow of Zarephath, and Elijah meets her out, and she's gathering some sticks, and Elijah says, "What are you going to do?" She says, "I'm going to go back, and I'm going to start a fire, and I've got just a little bit of flour left, a little bit of oil, and I'm going to bake my last bread." And then she says this odd thing. She says, "I'm going to bake our last bread, and then we're going to die. It's all the bread we got, all the flour we got. We're going to make this last meal, and after we eat this meal, we're going to starve and die." And you know the story. Elijah goes, and miraculously, her flour and her oil never runs dry, and they're able to continue to provide food through a miracle. And it seems to me almost like this, in that situation here, that she's desperate. And I don't know the rest of the story. We'll have to wait till heaven. But I think God provided for her. And it seems like to me she's like, "This is all I have, and what I have I'm going to give to God. And I'm going to trust God to provide for me." And what God, it seems to me, is saying is, if you are down to your end of your rope and you have nothing left, the two pennies, who are you going to trust? If you only got two pennies, who are you going to trust? Are you going to give those two pennies to God and say, "God, this is nothing. It's really nothing. But I'm going to give it to you as a sign that I'm trusting you." And trust God. Trust God. She gave out of her poverty. It reminds us of 2 Corinthians chapter 8. There where the Macedonian brethren gave out of their deep affliction and poverty. You see, they gave out of their abundance. I think we were talking about in the Wednesday night class about the parable of talents. And the great challenge is, when we are blessed, to know how to give out of our abundance. This lady had great faith. She had great faith. This is the greatest percentage monetary gift in all the Bible. Y'all have heard me say this for years at Seven Oaks, but some of you maybe knew. I won't say it again. I believe that when you study the Bible, you find that the gifts given to God are somewhere between 10%, the tithe, and 100%. And so people ask me, well, what should we give? Well, to me, you find examples for giving somewhere in between 10 and 100%. Now, you choose which level you want to give, but I think that all of us should have it as a goal to give somewhere in between 10 and 100%. This lady is the only one I know who gave 100%. She gave everything she had to live on. And then we see a sacrificial gift, 2 Samuel chapter 24, verse 24. David, when the plague was going on that was killing the Israelites because of his arrogance and his census of the people, he has to go and he's going to have to make an altar and he's going to have to buy this lamb. And the man says, I'll just give you this land. You don't have to buy it. And David says, no, I got to pay you. He says, I cannot offer to the Lord that which cost me nothing. And that's a challenging statement. You know, is it really a gift? Were these rich people really giving a gift if it cost them nothing? If it cost them nothing, were they really giving? I think that's the idea. One was giving out of their abundance, so it really wasn't costing them. This widow gave all she had. Gave all she had. Certainly, we're not saying that God expects us to give all we have in terms of monetarily means, because if we did that, then all of us then would be looking for someone else to provide for us. And Jesus, and Paul talks about that idea that we need to provide for our own family. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, he talks about that if any man will not work, neither let him eat. We've got some responsibilities that we've got to use our money for. But in this situation, this woman gave all she had. But I do think we need to give sacrificially. Is it really a gift if it cost us nothing? And so we close by looking at this, at these comparisons in this text. When you read this text, you have several comparisons. And I think Jesus is asking us to compare our life with what's going on in this passage. Am I sincere? Do I care for widows and orphans? Where am I when it comes to the dangers of poverty and the dangers of wealth? Thinking about how God views things versus how man views things, and understanding the abundance versus poverty. This evening, if you're not a child of God, if you need to put Christ on in baptism, if you need to rededicate your life, we're going to give you an opportunity to come as together we stand and as we sing.